Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 599. Going to recap the week 18 in Fab. Going to talk about some, not all of the trades, because there's other shows for that. And we're actually recording in the middle of Tuesday, where there's going to be probably 70 more trades to go. So we'll get all that for you. But we're going to talk about some playing time situations based on injuries and some of the trades. We're going to talk about Fab as usual. And, of course, we're going to hear about the king. At least he was the king and going to be the king again sometime and see how things are going with him, because we were talking off air and I'd rather save it for the air. You can find me on Twitter at BDintric, and the king I'm referring to, you can find on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. Mike Curlin, how we doing, my friend?
We've seen better days over here, Bubba. We've seen better days. It's just like life is exhausting right now. No one cares, but I picked up my son yesterday from South Florida. So I do it. What usually is about, when I do it one day, it's roughly 7.5-8 hours of driving. I'm used to it by now. Turned into like 11 plus hour drive because of traffic, and I was exhausted coming off shift. So I actually pulled over and took a nap for the first time ever during this ride. It was just terrible. The terrible weather caused stop and go on. Today's like I'm recovering, and I'm like, but there's so much to keep up with the baseball side of things, and then of course the stuff that people might care about a little bit. My league isn't going as planned right now. I'm slipping in the standings a little bit. It's one of those things. I take it one step forward, three steps back right now. Hopefully that this final 2 month stretch, I still like my team a lot. Still believe in it plenty. It's just a matter of, will they come through for me? Because at the end of the day, I put my best foot forward and I can't control the outcome. You can only control the outcome so much, I should say. So there's just a lot going on. But other than that, everything's good, man. Life's good.
Good. And kind of like what we were talking about, or you were mentioning there, we were talking about off the air of, you're slipping a bit. I said I have some teams that they're still in first place in their leagues pretty handily, mm-hmm. but they're slipping in the overall. They've gone from like 30th overall to like 112 in like 2 weeks. It's crazy. So a couple takeaways, it's showing there's a lot of fluctuation and closeness in overall standings. And B, I wanted to bring it back to one of your tweets you had on Tuesday about like the top 10 WOBA players in the month. And we've seen other guys tweet out different July things, but like I highlighted, four of the guys were free agents, at least at the beginning of the month, if not in the middle of the month. So the proof is there's still 2 months of baseball where you can move up and down the standings pretty handily if you stick to the grind. That's the hard part, because you said you're tired. I know I'm tired. A lot of people are tired. It's a long – we say it all the time. Everybody says it. It's a freaking grind. It's a long season, and football's coming into play. So if you stick to it, though, there are avenues to gain some momentum if needed.
If I could gain 50 points, overall points, rest of season, that's what, 8 weeks, so about 400 points. Those 400 points, if I can gain 50 points a week, that would put me at 6,700-ish. Let's see where that would put me in the overall. And that's 50 points a week is actually, because I think I dropped 80 yesterday just by not having anyone really playing, between injuries, between people just sitting. Like Nolan Jones got an extra day off, but I still started him. Stuff like that. I just dropped 85 points yesterday. So if I gain 50 points a week, rest of season, including this week. That's what we have 9 weeks, including this week, or like 8 weeks. 8 weeks, including this week.
It should be 8 weeks, including this week, because it's the last week of September. Is the last week of baseball.
Yeah. So 8 weeks. So 50 points a week. Like I said, that's 400, because I can do math, right? Yeah, that puts me top eight, top seven, top eight in the overall. Win it all, but it would be a nice big bonus compared to me being like 17th or 18th in the overall. Just goes to show you that, like, I obviously I always want to think big picture, but that's why you got to play scoring period to scoring period. And that's why this one, I hate that I think I set myself up for a little more failure than I should have for the scoring period, because it's too late in the season to be risking taking zeros right now and stuff. And I put myself at a really big risk of possibly taking a zero. If Nolan Jones misses time or something, I might not have a replacement. So I was going to ask you what you did with him.
Cause I sat him pretty, once I saw he was not in Monday's lineup, you might not have had options. I get it. That might've been a thing.
I played the risky game of starting him most places, but especially in my main, because first off, it's a core series. Even if he only plays two of three, I thought maybe there was a chance to pinch hit.
Still could be great, yes.
If it really was cramps, I do expect two of three, which is kind of the big thing here. Two games in cores versus three games from a streamer, depending on who was available. But for me, part of the issue was I got a little greedy with my stashes, and I have four guys on IL on my bench, which is causing a bit of an issue, and I probably should have thought strongly about dropping one of them, but... Like, I have Mullins nearing a return. I have Woodruff finally nearing a return, which that was a terrible idea to stash him. We can talk about that as a whole, too. Stashing him was not a smart move, even with my team.
Why? Because we were hoping for maybe like an early mid-July. It took so long, or what? What was the reason why it was a bad stash? Because now he's coming back, so we can't even think about that anymore.
No, it was because it was prolonged into – Well, I mean, if I'm lucky, I'll be lucky to get 6 weeks. So what is that? Seven, eight starts if I'm lucky. Yeah. Now, if he comes back and is absolutely electric and elite and the ace that he was drafted to be, then it could be worth it. But it was one of those things where it's hard to justify holding on to that spot, not utilizing that roster spot to turn and burn and maybe landing on something else this whole time. Because now I'm banking on Woodruff being Woodruff for the rest of the season, which is far from a guarantee coming off an injury, especially when that's kept him out this long. With that said, my team being in the position it's been, I always was able to, I never had to really think about using, I think the reason why I'm starting to have that regret is because like right now where it's like, it's crunch time and I've set myself up looking forward a little too much, at least for 1 week. This week, I'm hoping to get through with minimal damage and losing points, or if I'm lucky to gain some ground, that'd be great. But I set myself up poorly this week for the first time in a while. So I must have let my guard down. I overthought it or underthought it, realizing that we have less than 10 weeks left. And every scoring period is amplified right now, in my opinion, especially when you're chasing the overall. And I kind of dropped the ball here. And I'm thinking maybe like that's, again, I'm happy to have him now because he's what, a couple weeks, maybe two more rehab starts away.
Yep.
But it's one of those things where it's like, maybe I'm projecting my thoughts of coming up short this week onto like how I managed him all year, because it was very team specific. Holding on to him for me with where I've been all year with pitching and having the solid options on my bench and kind of playing the whole three reliever some weeks and stuff, I was able to maneuver it just fine. But maybe it's not him, maybe it's other guys, like maybe Royce Lewis I shouldn't have held on to this whole time, but middle infield's so bad in my league that like I lost India, so it made me want to hold on to Lewis again because now I have India that's hurt, and India was playing hurt, which makes sense why he sucks so bad. So I don't know. Lewis was really the bad hold at this point. Like I was fine holding him, but I should have probably dropped him last week when it got to a little bit of a roster crunch, and this week I definitely probably should have. It's just hard because like I know if I drop him, I won't be able to afford to get him back for one, but two, he's probably gonna be back in 2 weeks. So it's like, is dropping him for 2 weeks really worth it for a guy like, I don't know, Bryce Turang, just because I know Turang's not getting me zeros? Like, that's the type of guys I'm looking at, too. So it's part of, like, it's not like Story's out there for me to stash and hold. When Story comes back, do I try to make that swap? Probably. But do I have the money to get Story? Probably not. So it becomes an issue of, like, do I stream to guarantee these play appearances that could be almost negative production if depending on who I get? Or do I hold on to Lewis knowing what he could be, comes back, plays 5 out of 6, 5 out of 7 every week, but has the potential to be difference making down the stretch? So I'm having a hard time justifying making these moves. And I don't know if that's part of that's adding up again, but my team as a whole has just been kind of slack outside of McCormick, outside of Massey, who I added last week, which was a solid week. My team's just been kind of lackluster on offense. So it's like, I'm losing more points on offense than I'm gaining in pitching, even though I'm gaining some points in pitching right now. So it's one of those things where it's like, I've lost, I think, a total of like 400 points since the All-Star break, and it's been a slow, steady like a slow bleed, man. It's just been aggravating. But anyway, enough. I had to get that off my chest. It's been I haven't been on the show, I've been intermittent.
That's why I was letting you have the floor, man.
It's been intermittent. It's just our schedules haven't lined up, which is unfortunate. I really enjoy this show every week, and it gives me a chance to get this off my chest. But it's one of those things where it's like, I'm doing, I'm questioning my moves now because obviously something's not working. So I'm questioning my strategy. So I got to kind of put it out there just because if somebody maybe somebody will comment on the show and be, hey, you know, this was what I think. And maybe it'll just spring a thought, but it's like right now, something's not working right now. I'm trying to figure out what it is. Or is it just a matter of be patient through this week, reassess and get those final 7 weeks, really like be really strong down the stretch of the final 7 weeks. 7 weeks is still plenty of time to make up points. Oh, yeah. It's just one of those things where I really think every scoring period matters in FBC right now, and I'm not attacking it the best way I can. So yeah. I got to hurry up and fix that and not get lazy. Luckily, I don't do a whole lot of football stuff, very minimal, and most of it's just for my own fun. Mm-hmm. So I should be fine. I think it's just one of those things where life's been really busy, and maybe it's just an excuse. Maybe I've just been lazy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's not like me, though. It's not like me. I've been crushing it all year. So it's not like I'm ready. I'm still ready. I'm still good. I'm still full baseball mode. I'm still in the mood for the game. That's the thing. So I don't know why I'm not. It's performance anxiety, maybe.
Yes. Yeah. That's all it is. It's all good. It's part of the grind. We have our ups and our downs. Like before, I mentioned this recent fall for the overalls. My teams are just like climbing like crazy up the overalls. So you can have good and bad weeks. And that's kind of the point of the conversation. Like Jazz Chisholm just came back on Monday. You mentioned Sed Mullins hopefully this weekend. Thyro Estrada starting a rehab assignment on Tuesday. He's expected back this weekend. You got Max Fried coming back. Nestor Cortez is around the corner. You mentioned Woodruff. There are some big names coming back. So if guys were stashing, you're going to get hopefully get rewarded shortly. They're available on the wire. They might be available. Otherwise, you know, it is what it is. But there are some, hopefully, I'd say, resources coming to your teams if you're doing that. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
You mentioned Thyro Estrada. I think that's a very interesting situation because you have Wilmer Flores.
But I can already finish that sentence for you right now. He'll play first base full-time because Lamont Wade's all banged up.
No, that's fine. But I was also getting the fact that you also have and somebody that I'm not even that high on, but we'll talk about because I did get him in Fab. But like Marco Luciano's playing in the infield spots. I know Brandon Crawford's still in the mix, but he's not what he used to be. It's just a very crowded situation for a situation that shouldn't be so crowded. And I'm just curious. Like I know Flores. Here's the thing: Flores will play as long as he's hitting. But the second he stops hitting righties, mm-hmm. he's gonna go back to platooning. It's that simple. So we know that. Like that could just figure itself out over the next week or so. But it's just one of those things where I'm looking at this team and like Casey Schmidt's still factoring against lefties. Yeah, he's
playing horrible.
And though. Yeah, he's been awful. So I'm just. It's one of those things where like Luciano, does his run end this weekend when Thyro Estrada returns?
I think it could. What I would do personally, I'd have Casey Schmidt's run end for a bit, give Marco a little longer of a shot here. But we'll see how that plays out because you can put Wilmer Flores over to second base, let Luciano and Crawford do their thing, or actually Thyro would play second base. That was the whole point of the conversation. Mm-hmm. But you could have Flores play first base or DH. That's definitely an option because they're losing bodies. Yastrzemski just went back to the IL. Wade, yep. like I said, is banged up. They traded for AJ Pollock, so they still have him on the IL. There's so many stupid things the Giants are doing. So, yeah,
retooling as always, just always retooling.
It's re-frustrating every time. But I think Luciano gets a little bit of a shot here. Otherwise, there was no point in calling him up to begin with. And Schmidt might be the odd man out here. Like every time I want to give up on JD Davis, he like puts together like a 2 week stretch where like, okay, that's the JD Davis we know. And mm-hmm. it's like, and then he does, and like I was there Saturday when he hit the walk off on the first pitch. I'm like, okay, there's JD Davis. Where the heck has that been for a while? But Flores is good to go. I'd ride that until the wheels fall off.
Gotcha. Yeah, just thought I'd ask because you're as plugged in as I am into playing time, people tend to have a better, you know, someone who follows the team as close as you do. 100%. Yeah, I usually defer to that. Like again, I can tell you what I'm seeing, but I can't speak to the feel of the team because I don't watch them or monitor them as closely as someone like you or George or etc. You know, so
for sure. All right, let's do some news and notes and some playing time discussions here before we recap Fab for the week. Again, tons of other trade shows. I'll be doing a trade show with Bloomfield on Tuesday night if you guys want to talk about that. But I just want to see all the dust settle before we overreact because one move might lead to the team making another move, and everything we talked about is pointless right now. So let's stick to our plan here. Jonah Heim, this one's near and dear to my heart because Jonah Heim was my most rostered player out of draft season. Jonah Heim is having an amazing season. And Jonah Heim has a massive tendon issue in his wrist that, perfect world, 4 to 6 weeks. I am realistic and thinking they'll be lucky to have him by the playoffs because they're going to let it like rest, and he still might need surgery after the rest. It's not a good deal. And I dropped him. We'll talk about that in ad drops. The biggest reason is it's a wrist injury. So even if he comes back to catch, which is dicey to begin with, how's his hitting going to be? Like, this is a nasty deal. So regardless, add, drop, whatever with Heim, playing time-wise, it points to Garver, but what's your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, right now you're actually getting playing time out of Sam Huff and Garver of late. Sam Huff started 2 straight. Garver has started 5 straight. So that shows you I think Garver is going to get the most out of this, though. And Garver is hitting a lot better than Sam Huff. Huff really is kind of the ascent, that epitome of boom or bust, of he's going to hit you a home run or he's not going to hit you at all. And over the last 5 games, he has 11 plate appearances, 1 home run, and that's his only hit. So,
season, by the way,
what happened?
That's his only hit the entire season.
Yeah.
He's got 2 singles, but since getting recalled on the 22nd, 1 hit.
Yeah. That's why it's kind of who he is. Like, he can hit on a hot stretch, he could do full Joey Gallo and hit like 250, 275.
He was hitting almost 300.
Just a home run.
Holy shit.
Yeah, well, he's also, I think, a little bit old for the level two is part of it. So, but one of the things with Huff is that he has a lot of swing and miss in his game. Huff is going to – he'll provide power in bunches, but I just don't know how – I could see them – this is a team that by the time we're done recording could easily trade for a catcher. Like, Yasmani Grandal would be a great fit for them type of thing. I mean, they're already all in. Grandal kind of fits that. You know, I know he's older, but at least it fits a need and probably a better bat than both these guys, I would argue. But at the end of the day, I think it's Garver gets the biggest bump. And if you're like in an AL only, like Sam Huff is not even a C2 guy for me yet, but he is a guy that AL only, at least he's getting you plate appearances for the time being. But Garver's the big winner here, hitting 300 over the last 2 weeks with a home run, 6 combined runs in RBIs, nothing special there. But at least, again, something, he is a C2, at least for me moving forward.
Okay.
Mitch Garver.
Yeah, I do like Garver. We'll talk about him in ad drops, but yeah, played much better. He's going to pretty much play every day via DH or catcher. So I'm with you on that one. And if you look at 12s right now, Garver's only 40% rostered. So you got that going for you. Hyungjin Ryu, he's going to return on Tuesday, the day we are recording this. Not sure when you're listening to it, and make his first start of the season. He's missed over a year due to his obvious major injury, Tommy John surgery and whatnot. I believe it was Tommy John. He's got his shoulder. But he's out for over a year. He's going to return to the diamond and face the Orioles. What I have for you now is, how do we assess this rotation? Yeah, Gausman, Manoa, Barrios, Bassett, Kikuchi's been pretty good. You slide Ryu in there. So it's 6 guys. Do they go 6-man, do you think? Do they get rid of Manoa? How do you play this out if you're rostering these pitchers?
I think it's almost going to be a wait and see approach, because if Ryu comes back and isn't, he's like a shell of his former self, that might just fix itself. Maybe they go 6-man for a time being just to give Gausman a few extra. Gausman's, you know, that's their ace. They want to give him some extra rest. You know, he looked great in his last outing, but coming off the, what was it, like a potential oblique or whatever it was, like that, like a side issue that he missed the start off of. So I could see them maybe playing around with the 6-man rotation idea for a few weeks just to see what happens. But I do think it's going to ultimately come down to Ryu or Manoa. I don't think Manoa's suddenly safe. He has, outside the Detroit start, he hasn't looked all that sharp. I know he looked a little better in his last outing, but still, Manoa's just walking to many players and he's not returning to form as many would hope at this point. So I think it's going to be between those two, but it could be as simple as like Ryu comes out, looks awful, velocity's down across the board, gets smacked around, and that could be it. Maybe they start giving Manoa an opener, let Manoa only go three or four innings.
Yeah.
And maybe let Manoa piggyback with somebody else. But I don't think it's weird, because, you know, starters have routines. They know how to get started with going to games. They kind of have their pregame warm-up stuff. To suddenly throw a guy behind an opener can throw off a routine. Some players flourish in that role, but a lot of pitchers, I feel like, need a chance to adapt, because that's not something they've ever done their whole lives. Suddenly, like, hey, this is what you're doing. But it's so, and that's even behind an opener, it doesn't make them, it still puts them in the rotation. So I could see them easily putting Manoa back down if they want to get him a few reps in the minors, see if they can figure him out some more, because obviously he doesn't seem fully fixed. But at the end of the day, I think that, like, those are the two that's like I'm torn on which one might. It's one, like, I don't think both of them are going to be in the rotation for long, if at all. If they end up sending one down, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a tricky situation. Ryu's not even rostered in 12 because he wasn't drafted. So on NFBC formats, yeah, you have to wait till see how the start goes. Like on my DFS show, I said, I love Ryu if he was healthy, but I'm not pitching him today because I want to see him first start back after a year facing the Orioles. It could get ugly. But a lot of teams are talking 6-man rotations right now at the trade deadline. We always know how that goes. Usually someone gets hurt. We're back to 5 before you know it. Life goes on. But the Astros are a team discussing a 6-man rotation, and it actually makes sense for them. You got Framber Valdez, who has struggled the last couple starts. Christian Javier he's getting pushed back again this week for an extra day's rest, like he got last week, and he pitched very well off of it. They want to kind of keep that for Javier. You got Hunter Brown, whose innings are going to get close pretty soon. JP Francis pitched well. Jose Urquidy's coming off a 3-month IL stint this week. These guys could use extra day. They might trade for Verlander still, who, you know, he's getting old and long in the tooth. He could probably use an extra day. Six man makes sense in Houston, all things considered. But what I was going to ask you is, if they go six man, how does it make you feel about guys like, you know, Jose Urquidy coming off the IL, JP France, some of these other kind of fringy guys? Because Framber's Framber. People love Hunter Brown. There's no doubt about that. But how are you as, like, even Christian Javier? We'll throw him into the mix, who's been really rough this year.
I kind of would turn, especially with the more fringe guys, I'm suddenly going to be less interested in making, like, none of them are going to be must starts anymore, because it would obviously Framber probably is, and most likely Hunter Brown is too. But when it come, you can't just, like, you're going to be looking at them as one start guys versus the two start guys. Like, do you have Brian Bayo is too good of an option, but do you have a, I don't know, like, is Kikuchi have like two great matchups, or Christian Javier's one? And you're already kind of making that decision weekly as it is, but it makes them. But now there's no week. It's like, okay, here's just two start week. I'm plugging them in, saying I'm forgetting them. It becomes a thing where these guys become fluent roster, like rotation pieces for your bench slash, you know, back into your rotation, depending on the league size. And in shallower formats, if you can't give me a two start week out of JP France, I have a hard time forcing him in there, unless it's a really good one start week, but he's still a bench streamer more than likely for you. But at the end of the day, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know. I just, they kind of like, they never, like, outside of Framber and, like I said, Brown, probably it's like none of them are ever set and forget at that point. They just become bench streamers for me.
Yeah. It feels like the Angels, who are like the only team that stuck with six man all year. So most of those guys, even like Griffin Canyon, you look at him like, yeah, he gets added and dropped all the times in 12s, because it's just, you can't hold on to guys like that. So I'm curious to see how Houston will play that one forward. We will discuss a little bit of trade situation here. The Angels have been active, but I want to talk CJ Cron and Randall Grichuk coming over from Colorado. Grichuk already hit a home run on Monday in his first start with the Angels. He's playing in the outfield. Cron obviously playing first base. Who does this hurt in Anaheim when we're looking at the Cron Randall Grichuk situation?
Cron, Randall Grichuk, this whole situation's so much going on over there. I'm still obviously waiting, but like last night, for instance, I'll pull up the lineup, but obviously I think Crone's just fine. He started against a righty right away, because, you know, Cron has those splits, so you would have thought maybe a chance for splits. But Grichuk slotted right there into against a righty as well. Ward being out, there's an opening right there. Now when Trout returns, that's gonna be when it's interesting. I think Moniak's gonna stay. I think Moniak might lose his full-time at bats. I can see Moniak getting back into a platoon when Trout returns, because they have to have, I don't think they're gonna suddenly just put Grichuk to the bench or Renfro to the bench. If nothing else, both those guys, like, they, I know they have room for them right now, but how long is Cron has played first base now? So like Renfro won't be able to play a ton of first base, and they don't have that, you know, so they can really go platoon heavy. Moustakas can easily lose playing time as well. And that's the thing, right now there's a spot for all of them, but how long is Rengifo going to hold on to this thing? And it's, I don't honestly know what to expect. I'm curious to see what happens when Trout returns. And then on top of that, they have Drury returning too.
Yeah.
So I can see them, like, just because they're in such a win now mode, they can easily say, screw it. If you're a lefty, you're getting the righties. If you're a righty, you're getting the lefties. Yep. So like Drury can be screwed out of a full-time play, a full-time spot, especially, and they might just run with hot hands. Like Moustakas is hitting well, right? So yes. Why would Moustakas suddenly hit the bench for Drury who returns? So it's one of those things where it's like, I can see Drury, I can see them just kind of riding hot hand and making it work. For instance, and go back to splits, Moniak's hitting 152 against righties this year, or lefties this year, excuse me, with a .200. Yes, that's a single digit number .200 WRC plus and a OPS of .382 against lefties. So Moniak's more than likely not sticking against lefties moving forward. Whereas I know Grichuk can handle lefties. So that can easily be a platoon in the making. So right now, ride these guys out while they have the playing time. But there's a lot of changes coming their way, especially as Drury and Trout return. And then Rendon, who knows if he's going to return, but Rendon would just add another wrinkle to the mix. But you already saw Trey Cabbage get nixed. Neto's back. Neto's going to play every day. Escobar's probably most likely back into a weak side platoon already. And outside of Otani, Trout when he returns, and Neto, I don't see a whole lot of full-time guys. And Rengifo has it right now while he's playing well and deserving the playing time. We also know how Rengifo, if you look at his past split issues, he hasn't been great against righties over his career. So does Rengifo, once he slows down, he probably ends up right back into a platoon against lefties more than righties. And right now, they haven't faced a ton of righties, but right now on the year, Rengifo still has a 896 OPS against lefties with a 144 WRC plus compared to a 649 OPS and an 80 WRC plus against righties. Just to give you an idea of Rengifo's splits, that's just this year, his career, very similar idea of very, very noticeable issues. That was part of why I faded him into this year in general, because I didn't trust the playing time and the production against righties to be there. So Rengifo, I just think it's more of a hot streak. I wouldn't get my hopes up on his playing time moving forward. It's like, again, a lot of moving parts, a lot of things to consider, but I can see this team going very platoon heavy with very few players getting every day at bats once this team's fully healthy again, which is going to be soon.
Very soon, because Trout started taking swings. He'll start taking BP soon. Drury's supposed to be coming back this week, I think. Well, that's what I heard. Like any day. So they're going to turn full Tampa Bay Rays on us.
I could see this being a Tampa Bay Rays / Giants situation where hot hands will stick, but for the most part, it's gonna be pretty platoon heavy.
We'll be streaming guys off the wires.
I'm curious about Renfro. Renfro is kind of the fringe option of, like, I could see him staying every day just because he's such a solid defender, solid all around player. So I could see him sticking in the outfield because Trout's gonna need frequent days off and all that too, which will help his playing time. But it's one of those things where I see 3, maybe 4 bats full time for this lineup moving forward once everyone's back and healthy. Which again, next 2-3 weeks. This is going to suddenly be a real big cram. So pay attention or just, follow the Patreon and I'll keep you up to date.
There you go. Real quick, let's just talk to the Rocky side of this one because it opens up interesting situations. Like Michael Tuglia is a popular name. Elias Montero has been up and down. This might keep him up for a while. Britton Doyle is a guy. Brendan Rodgers just came back. That's big if you're a believer in that. It probably helps Nolan Jones stay even more locked in to what we love. Who do you think are some of the bigger benefactors here? Because, man, when you look at this roster resource page, it's disgusting, especially on the bench.
So you mentioned it. Brenton Doyle's, he was already getting mostly regular playing time, but this just probably secures his playing time. Like, there's not going to be any more random days off type of thing. It's probably going to be as secure as it's ever been, which, it's been very strong lately. Krohn and Grichuk being out, that obviously opens the door for Nolan Jones to get regular playing time. He shouldn't platoon as heavily. Tuglia has already seen his playing time increase, playing 5 of 6, including a start against – oh, he sat against last lefty, but he started against 2 of the last 5 that they've faced overall. Elias Montero, I think he's just going to return to a platoon role. He was kind of in one before – Jones kind of his day-to-day.
And Blackman's coming back soon, so that could change.
I saw news right before we started something about his, he's actually not starting his rehab assignment tonight like he was expected to, so I don't know if there was a setback or something. So, but that's the thing. I was gonna bring up Blackman until I saw that. So Blackman, he's going to eventually, but I could see them, for instance, Profar, if they might be able to deal Profar before the day's over.
True.
And then there's another spot that's open. So it's one of those things where if whoever's getting playing time right now outside of Montero, I think we'll keep it. I think Tuglia is going to hold it for a little bit. Chris Bryant's still not nearing a return type of thing. So it's just one of those things where even Harold Castro is going to get playing time right now. And he's always been a strong side platoon guy for the most part, but I think it's just more secured now. So it's, the biggest winners are probably Tuglia. Obviously Brendan Rodgers is going to play as much as he can handle. And maybe Coco Montes gets back into the mix. I know they just called him back up, but he was platoon initially when he got called up the first time, probably falls right back into a platoon again, but just a name to kind of know in case there's another injury or trade. Coco Montes flashed power speed in the minors, and even at the major league level, he just struck out too much and couldn't be consistent. But yeah, it's I think Tuglia is you mentioned him as the name. I mentioned 3 or 4 times because it's kind of the obvious name that's poking out right now that he's playing every day. He's batted 6th last 2 games against righties, and so he's moving into a better spot in the lineup, and he should have more secure playing time, especially as long as first base is available and outfield, which there's plenty of both. So Nolan Jones should be back, though. Could probably bump him down a spot or two, but we'll see.
What are your thoughts on Brendan Rodgers coming back from the IL? Is going to basically be locked into the middle of that order, which is weird. No speed. He's never stolen a base in the bigs, but it's got maybe 10 to 15 home run type power. He's only got 2 months of the season left, so who knows what he brings to that table. But he's only 2% rostered in 12s, probably similar in 15s. So what are your thoughts on Brendan Rodgers?
He's right now, I mentioned how I need middle infield help. Probably a guy to go after. Probably shouldn't be too expensive either, because again, you mentioned it's very, very mediocre. Projections, this is the type of guy I would kind of just look at the projections for. He's projected for anywhere from 4 to 6 home runs, which is not bad, just nothing special. But the batting average is actually a bonus. So if you buy to the projections, most of them, I think 279 from Steamer is the lowest projection rest of season for him. If you buy into the projections being realistic, even though he hasn't hit over 266, I lied. He's only hit over 266 once. That was 2021. So I can't really, one season of hitting under 280, but projections seem a little bullish on the batting average. I could see him being, even if he was closer to a 260, 270 hitter, which is very solid, I think he would be kind of like a 15-team middle infield, like, plug for now. Like, if you're hurting, like, if you lost India, if you had Jordan Westberg, who's not really playing or doing well, if you're waiting on Royce Lewis to return, I'm speaking from experience here. it's just the right now, it's just really crazy. Like, that's kind of where middle infield is for deeper formats. So if you didn't get Michael Massey, if you didn't get, like, even what's his face, Monasterio from like, who's playing decently, but I feel like he's in that conversation with Monasterio where it's like, these guys are playing, if they're going to hit, great. Let's just, and they're just playing every day. Just get them in there. Give me my play appearances. That's where I see Rodgers in that middle infield mixed 15 teamers. I don't see him as being 12 team relevant just yet.
All right. Let's head to Minnesota. You mentioned Royce Lewis. Let's talk about another teammate that can't stay healthy. Alex Kirilloff. It's not the wrist this time. And he was swinging it good yet again. This is a tradition unlike any other. Now it's a shoulder injury, which they're hoping they caught early. We'll see. So he's going to be out of the IL for how long? We're not sure. But it probably locks Matt Wallner into regular playing time is the way I see it. But how do you assess this Kirilloff situation to maybe benefit us in fantasy?
So Wallner he started against a lefty yesterday. So he's already a step in the right direction. Don't know if that's going to hold. And we could see them add. I'd be surprised if they add another outfielder because they have so much depth that there's rumors about Larnick being traded from this team. But Willie Castro's a bigger winner now. Like, he was already playing every day, but, like, you know how his playing time has been up and down all year. It's kind of just secures more playing time even. Not that he needed the security necessarily, but he's just been a guy that's been so in and out of this lineup that they're losing other options to keep him out of the lineup, even if he goes through a cold spell type of thing. So I think Willie Castro gets more security. Max Kepler, he's been playing mostly every day, and that's probably going to hold up. I know he sat yesterday against the lefty, which is why Wallner got in. But I don't see that being the case too often because Max Kepler's actually been playing against lefties comparatively so. To Wallner, so I could see. I don't think Wallner's going to gain much playing time against lefties, but I think Wallner's just more secure now in the outfield for sure. But when Royce Lewis returns, I wonder how that's going to factor because I think I saw someone mention that Royce Lewis won't play the outfield, but pretty sure Lewis not only can play the outfield, but did in the minors this year before playing third base and coming up as a third baseman.
Well, he played the outfield last year. That's how he messed his knee up by going into the wall on a catch.
They're probably afraid of that happening again, honestly, but yeah. Where else are they going to play him? Unless they shut down Polanco, unless Polanco gets hurt again, and that's the opening.
And Polanco can play first base and you move Joey Gallo back to the outfield.
I didn't realize Polanco played first base. You would think I would know that, but no.
Him and Luis Arraez have had some first base.
I remember Arraez.
Because I'm pretty sure Polanco did at some point last year. He plays third base, so he can play first base.
I wish Julian's awful at second. Maybe Julian can learn first base on the fly. I feel like that'd be such a good
Or Julian game. Learns the outfield, one of the two.
Or Julian just, or Buxton can stay healthy and play the outfield like he should.
No, let's not be silly now, Kirlin. Let's not be silly. That's not an option. You know, it'll all work itself out because these Twins, as much as they're fun for fantasy, they're all so just ready for the next IL stint. So just like let it play out. Someone's going to get hurt. The door will open for a spot for Royce Lewis.
Yeah, but right now, Wallner's the guy that, and I guess Michael A. Taylor technically can start getting a little more playing time because now he becomes the next man up in that outfield and can easily slot into center field as needed or consistently moving forward. So we'll see what happens there. But, Taylor's been a strict weak side platoon bat for a while now, so I don't see him suddenly getting full-time run again. Yeah. But you never know. So, yeah, but at this point, it's Matt Wallner kind of just – Matt Wallner is Joey Gallo. Joey Gallo is Matt Wallner. So there's that.
Einhart is Finkel. The Texas Rangers have been quite aggressive at the trade deadline, which has been great to see. So we're going to highlight their starting rotation now. That consists of Scherzer, Montgomery, Dane Dunning, Martin Perez, Andrew Heaney, John Gray, and Nate Eovaldi's on the IL for who knows how long because he's got a flexor strain that's healthy-ish. So we'll see how that works. But for now, it's a six-man rotation. Even before Eovaldi went on the IL, they've been talking, like Bochy and the team were talking about giving starters some days off and extra rest. They kind of want to use a six-man rotation right now. This is a better six-man rotation than the one we talked about previously. Well, maybe not. It's pretty close to the Astros. Let's put it that way. It's maybe more top heavy than the Astros is. So how are you assessing this? If you roster, you know, you're going to play Scherzer, you're going to play Montgomery, of course, but your Dunnings, your Perez, your Heaney, your John Gray, who's been horrible since his blister situation. How are you rostering these players now?
Well, outside of, you mentioned the top names here, Montgomery and Scherzer, I'm probably looking to move on from like a guy like Dunning, Martin Perez, definitely. Heaney is so inconsistent. And John Gray, as you mentioned, hasn't been the same guy.
Is John Gray droppable?
In 12s more than 15s. I know I haven't really followed how bad. I know he's been iffy because every time I catch him on my recaps, I'm like, he just had another meh outing. Like, okay, like six earned runs. Last outing was awful. But the one before that was like no earned runs, but only four innings. But then the outing before that, four earned runs over six, three over six, five over. So it's been a lot more bad than good to a point where it's like, if he's only getting one, if he's never going to give you that two-start week where you can kind of at least get the strikeouts, I can see him being droppable in 12s. 15s is just, it's a whole different animal in 15s. You're holding him, you're streaming off your bench for a good matchup, but he's not a must start anymore. And he's not somebody you should start with even much confidence right now until he gets going again. So John Gray is a guy that, as much as I like him and I think that he can be better, I just, it's almost like, apparently, I know it's a random tangent, but somebody texted me that Braxton Garrett was secretly dealing with a blister injury, and that's why those four starts happened. Bad start, and then last start that he was better, like the blister injury was no longer an issue, and he went out and crushed Detroit. How much of that was crushing Detroit, I don't know, but it's one of those things where you don't always get all the news, and but it shows you how blisters can affect even the pitchers on the hottest of runs, including a Braxton Garrett type. So it was just a random tidbit I thought I'd throw out there because it pissed me off that they never say anything. I kept starting and taking the beating out of Braxton Garrett. But yeah, so John Gray, though, getting back on point, because you know I'm so awful at that. John Gray just goes back to, he's okay, he's serviceable, he's a streamer.
He's still 99% rostered in 12. That's why it's interesting. I have a few shares, and I've just been sitting him. He's on my bench. I'm hoping he figures it out, but it's tough.
Yeah. Okay, so who's available on the waiver wire, though? That's the thing. It's like, who are you dropping him for? True. Don't just drop them to drop them, but like if there's somebody with upside there, or if you need a certain stat,
say you're doing great in pitching, you need hitting. Do you drop John Gray to get a hitter to help stream to get you stats? That's why I want to have this conversation.
So
people think that way. It doesn't have to go pitcher for pitcher. It can go pitcher for hitter.
Well, if I'm chasing, how about this? Well, it can be for pitcher, but if you're chasing saves, if you're chasing Ks, if you're chasing anything but wins, because this guy obviously you want to stream him for wins potential, right? But now that he's not going to get two start weeks, or it's gonna be he needs that 7-game week to get lucky and hope not to get pushed back on a start to get the two start weeks, but he's gonna lack. So you're looking at seven more weeks after this, because this week's already locked in, right? You're looking at seven more weeks, and you're hoping for one. I would say you're hoping for one 2-start week, and even then, so right now you're not gonna be able to get strikeouts from him, right? So right there, that's one category you won't get from John Gray. Ratios have been taking a beating, so you're not even getting ratio help right now. You're not, so that's three out of five categories. We're talking about standard roto and points leagues. He's probably a negative, because other than wins, which he hasn't gotten a win since. Yeah, June 2nd, by the way,
for sure.
He hasn't gotten you a win since June 2nd, so he's not even guaranteed to get wins. You're just betting on the team context at that point. But right now, he has been getting, obviously, he's not going to give you saves, which
Justin Verlander just got traded to the Astros.
There it is. It was already, it was in deep talks. I don't see Ohtani going there. I mean, how's Ohtani going to go there next year and be like, yeah, look at this team that they just gutted?
Yeah, sorry, but I just had to say it. Continue where you were on the
John Gray. I'm just looking at John Gray, and it's like, the fact that he's not, wins aren't even guaranteed, considering he's gone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 straight wins, eight straight games with no wins, 0-4 over those 8 games, by the way. So you're hoping for wins, betting on team context, but overall he's been awful. And now you're not getting those 2-start weeks to even chase Ks. I could easily see you, I guess it's a long-winded way of saying John Gray is droppable if you're chasing a category elsewhere.
Well, and let's clarify, this is if they go 6-man. Maybe they say, no, we're going 5 still, and John Gray, like, if they stay on their 5-man rotation, Gray pitches against the White Sox on Wednesday this week, and then next week against the A's and the Giants. That's pretty dicey. That's fun.
You hold those.
I just want to clarify that we're saying this is, in theory, of the 6-man they've talked about. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, 6-man. This is strictly if they go 6-man in Texas with John Gray, the way he's been scuffling. But I would definitely hope. But here's the thing. The thing is, though, is John Gray becomes either a bench streamer in 12s, because in 15s you're not dropping him, but in 12s he's a bench streamer. Or we just talked about that 3-game run. If he comes out of those 3 games looking awful, he's an easy cut. So it makes the decision. Cut, yeah. But the problem is you are going to eat those bad starts, because they are really good. All three of those matchups are really strong.
Yeah, you're starting them everywhere unless you have God's gift of a rotation.
That's the thing. So it's one of those things where you're probably eating those bad starts in spite of what you're looking at what he's done, and like you shouldn't start him. You shouldn't start him if you're looking at recent track record, but you don't ignore those matchups. You just don't. Like, that's a guy that should be start. Like, if you're lucky enough to have that good of a rotation, you don't need to start him for a 2-start week, then he's the type of guy that if you're not starting him in that two start week, then you really should reassess if you have, should have him on your roster. That's where you're at. Like, you know, the like we kind of scoff at the whole, if you can't start him during a two start week, you shouldn't roster him type of thing. That's usually overblown, but in this scenario, given
these two matchups,
and given his name and the value and what he's done for your team, if you can't start John Gray in those matchups, you shouldn't roster him because you're never gonna start him elsewhere. So
100%
reassess your roster and look at it after thinking about that type of thing.
Let's quick hit through these last three here so we get to some fab recapping. Jordan Hicks goes to Toronto. We know Jordan Romano hit the IL. And I'm worried it might be longer than the minimum just because his back injury continues to linger. Back injuries pop up a lot. So you got Romano back there. Swanson's still there. Yimi Garcia has had his moments as well. Are you still interested in Hicks being the man for now, or what are your concerns with this situation?
I don't know what to expect. I honestly have no idea. I'm trying to think. I guess Hicks wasn't there. They had a save opportunity. They just had a save op, and it wasn't – I think it was Yimi got the last save op. I mean, they went out and got – did they? I thought they did. I swore I saw it. Maybe I mislooked at the box score. But either way, it's you got to think Hicks factors right into it. They went out and got him. But the thing is, as you mentioned, they have three other options, and Nate Pearson obviously is not going to factor at this point, but he's still a legitimate option, I would argue. But regardless, they have Swanson, they have Yimi Garcia, who's shown success in that role. I don't know if they suddenly say, you know what, Hicks, you haven't been with our team, but you've shown success with St. Louis for the first time in your career. Let's go ahead and put you in that role in the short term. I think it could be a mix. I think it's one of those things like maybe they go with Yimi first just to see if he can hold on to it. You're not dropping Hicks right now. You should definitely add him and spec on the save ops, but we haven't seen him factor into a save opportunity yet or how they've treated a save opportunity or two. I want to see them, and not even just one. I want to see them do it consistently. Like, is it Yimi one night, Hicks the next? Is it Hicks? It's the second they give somebody back-to-back opportunities.
Is it like straight 50-50 where we're just going to be annoyed the whole time?
That's and either way, you're going to – because that team's good enough to go on a run where they can get a lot of saves.
They can win like 12 in a row for all you know.
And you can get – like out of those 12 games, six can be saves, and you can get 3-3, and that's still those three. Those are still three saves, and Hicks was picked up as a guy that you were hoping to get saves out of. So Hicks is still in that I think it's kind of an equal value move with upside for more. So like at the very least, you're probably getting a guy who's going to factor. And then Hicks arguably be the guy right away, but we just don't know yet. We haven't seen it. So you're not dropping him. And if he's available and you need saves, you definitely target him type of thing for Hicks. But it's just one of those things where I don't really have a read on the situation yet because we haven't been in a situation to see what they're going to do.
In terms of St. Louis, are you team Giovanni Gallegos or team JoJo Romero? JoJo got to save the other night.
Yeah, JoJo.
Gallegos pitched two innings ahead of that, though, so he did his job.
I was going to say, I think Gallegos might be in that role. They might just, because that was the role he was in entering the year.
Yep.
And then I think that's the role that they want to probably keep him in moving forward. And he'll still get his saves. But if I had to guess, I would think there's a reason why they didn't go. They could have easily gone to Gallegos next man up if they wanted him to be the next man up. They didn't go there. Sure. And they kept Hicks in that role. Although Hicks earned it, they kept Hicks in that role ahead of Gallegos after giving Gallegos a very short leash initially with it after Helsley went down. So I do think it's going to be Romero more than likely. That's my read on it. But I can easily see Gallegos getting a couple two-inning saves here and there like we've seen him do in the past.
A couple minor league demotions here. Taj Bradley got sent back to AAA. It's been brutal. Talked about him on the first pitch pod, like over his last like four starts or something. It's like 24 and two-thirds innings, 25 or 26 runs score. Like he's walking. His K to walks 13.7%. Even when he was struggling before, he had like still like almost a 30% K to walk. So you're like, okay, we can live with that. If you are a Taj Bradley manager, how are you handling the situation? Because this is what I'm worried about a lot of these young pitchers. We're getting to August now. Innings limits, tired, all those type of things are going to start slowly showing up.
Yeah, I'm also wondering, they went out and got Savale. The Rays will probably go out and get one more pitcher before it's said and done, honestly. Yep. They've been in the market for every pitcher they've been linked to. They have the prospects to make it happen, too. They're going to let him work it. I think at this point, he's a drop because I don't think he'll be back up before September. I don't see him going down for one start. And, oh, he figured it out for one start. Let's bring him back up. They played that game earlier in the year. This year, this was like a, hey, we're going to send him down, let him get right, figure out what the hell's going on, and then bring him back up. That's how I'm reading this start. Because right now, they only have four starters plugged in right now per roster resource. Yeah. But I can easily see them make, again, I expect another deal. They can platoon their, they can, not platoon, they can bullpen a game. Like they've done in the past plenty of times.
They created it. They can do it.
that's kind of the point. So it's one of those things where it's like, I don't really know what to expect. I don't think they're done wheeling and dealing. I see the Rays going in and making one more move for another starter. That's That's kind of what I, that's my best guess what would happen. Where's Fleming at? I know, I thought I saw Fleming's name. Is he nearing a return yet?
I haven't seen any nearing return stuff in any of my reports that I do for first pitch. Yeah. So
I figured he is, that's why I asked you.
If he is, I've missed it. I have not seen any. He might be like slowly ramping up throwing, but I haven't heard anything about a near comeback. Let's put it that way.
Well, what about, Zach Littell? I forgot Littell's the name that could slot right in.
He opened the other day.
Well, he pitched didn't he pitch a few innings? Like he pitched multiple innings.
He pitched like three, maybe four. Like, he started as an opener and he went deep.
He just had a start. He did five innings his last outing.
He was scheduled as the opener. Apparently he's not. So there you go.
He was five innings. I remember seeing the name, five innings on the 30th, two earned runs against Houston, a very strong start. And a guy that could easily be taking over that fifth. You know how they treat these guys all the same, Fleming, Littell, just no name guys that they pull out of the multi-inning role and throw them like, not that Springs is a fair comp for him, but it's kind of that guy who's like, hey, you're a multi-inning guy who's showing success. Let's put you as a starter and see what happens. Springs obviously being way better, and not saying he's not, but it's just one of those things where I guess Zach Littell would probably be the man, that fifth man right now if they had to pick a fifth man.
He's an interesting streaming target. Just keep an eye on that one. Baltimore Orioles, Wells got sent back to Taylor Wells. Let's get that correct.
Well, Fleming did pitch 2 1/3 innings in AAA on the 28th. So he's nearing a return too. So they are getting.
I even just searched him. I had no news on him. So that's interesting.
I happened to see his name the other day because I do for the way you do your.
No, I literally just searched right now while you're talking on Twitter and I couldn't find any new news on him.
I searched the awful site that is NBCSports.com, but it was there. They had it. I mean, it's awful to look at, but I do find them useful for that still.
Tyler Wells got sent to Double A. That's closer to Baltimore, which the rumors are. He's supposed to be getting, like they said, he's getting tired. He's already surpassed his innings total from last season. And it's kind of showed. He was pitching really well in his last few starts. It's been a struggle bus. So he's going to get the Yuri Perez treatment, it feels like. Like, hey, go rest a little bit. Then we'll kind of ramp you back up to bring you up for the postseason. The Orioles are also rumored to be in on a bunch of starting pitchers on trade. So this will probably be settled by the time this is available to be listened to. That's why I didn't want to go deep into trade stuff. But they got Gibson. They got Bradish. They got Grayson, who's pitching really well. They got Dean Kramer. You know, in reality, some of those guys might need some innings concerns as well. Taylor Wells, are you just automatic drop? Or are you kind of holding where you can? Because he was very effective before this little hiccup.
Yeah, but I think I think the thing was is you got what you got out of Wells. I'm okay cutting bait at this point because you don't know when he's coming back up. Is he coming back up? Is it another guy that we see in a month from now? You don't have time to. He's not elite. And I know he was good, but he's not elite enough to hold on to, in my opinion, at this point, because you just don't know how long it's going to be. And that's funny because he is 28 years old. He's almost 29, and they're treating him like he's 21.
That's why I was surprised when I saw I got the motive for any of them. But the dude's not.
He's been good up until his last three starts. He just hit that wall, and that is concerning. I could see that. Like I said, I see at least 2 to 3 weeks, which if he's 2 to 3 weeks away, do you think he suddenly returns to being the guy he was? I know John Means is looking to return like near September, I think, too.
Yeah, he's looking to return, and they're going to get at least one pitcher, if not two.
They have Cole Irving, too, that they can – I mean, not that Cole Irving's good or anything, but they have – you know, they can stretch him back out. And so I'm not saying that these are better options than Wells by any means.
But they have options. So
it's kind of what I'm getting at, and I do think that – that's why it's like – and Wells was good, but he wasn't great. He was a very strong back-end rotation type. 12s, he's a cut easy, way easier. 15s, I understand the apprehension, but if I had him, I'd be cutting him. But I'm also starting to get back into that more aggressive mindset after being too passive and being – I told you my issues. I'm just annoyed with how I handled certain things. They also have Bruce Zimmerman in the minors. Not that he's good, but they have Drew Rom. They have Drew Rom. Drew Rom's was decent last year in the minors. I haven't looked at him this year, but just names that guys that I know they're on the 40 man and available to pick to come up and throw innings for them if they need. So, yeah, with all that said, Wells for me is a drop pretty much across the board right now, outside of your AL only leagues, which even then, if you need innings, you got to do what you got to do, you know?
Yep. All right. There'll be much more talked about for the trade deadline and whatnot. We'll get you all caught up there in the coming days, but let's talk Fab week 18. Doing 12 team OCs as usual, talking about the most added players, and it's getting to that time of the season where I laughed even a couple weeks ago. Some of these quote unquote big names not even getting picked up everywhere. So there are teams sleeping. There are teams like it's that time of the year, especially in 12s. The most added
dead teams. Obviously, dead teams, football, the mix of the two.
It's getting comical now. Like, I think it was like Zach Geloff a couple weeks ago was only added in like three quarters of the league. Like Soderstrom was added in like a quarter of the leagues. I'm like, if that was May, they were 100% rostered everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like, it's slowly disappearing. And that goes to show you, like, everyone's saying the closers, we haven't had closers to target, and that's the main targets this week. The most added player was Gregory Santos in 148 leagues, as high as $87, as low as a dollar. Santos picked up the save in his first chance after the Kendall Graveman trade a couple days ago. Hasn't pitched since then because, well, the White Sox aren't good. So you got that going for you. But when it comes to Gregory Santos, how in were you on him?
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat. But Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
I just wasn't. Not because I didn't believe in the skill set or the opportunity, because if you needed saves, he was the guy. It's just one of those things where I can't even name another starter on this team outside of Cease right now, without looking it up anyway. And so they already lack the pitching depth, like starting pitchers. They lack offense, especially if Tim Anderson actually gets moved, like is rumored. If they actually move off of if Grandal's out, if Berger's out, if these guys get shipped off, they're going to be bringing up guys, interesting names, but far it's going to be like a Triple A team at this point. And yep. I don't want the guy. Like, how do I really trust Jesse Schultens?
Jesse Schultens pitching today.
Yeah. Do I really trust him? I mean, Kopech's been awful. Tukey Toussaint, it's fun, but no. Clevinger. It's interesting sometimes, but that's the thing. I don't trust this team I don't trust the pitching outside of Cease days to get deep enough and then the bullpen to be good enough to hold leads for where Santos is going to get a meaningful chunk of saves down the stretch. So the amount of I kind of wanted to wait and see. Like I've been stashing, and this is why you should have been stashing if you could have before this run, because although Santos is a solid name and I think he is a solid get if you need saves, it's just one of those things where I don't know if I want to pay up for him on that. It's the team. It's like I would expect Carlos team Hernandez context
is important.
I expect Carlos Hernandez kind of would have been in the same price range had he been available, but he's been a very popular stash.
He was added in 38 leagues for as high as $23.
And I think if you look at that team, the Royals are probably better than
and the other thing with Hernandez, he comes in all kinds of situations. They just want, because he's their best pitcher, period. They just want him out there. So
I streamed him this week over Ginkle, and now Ginkle got a win, but Ginkle was also
blew the save to get the win.
Yeah, well, it was an unearned run. It was extra innings, but yes, it counts as a win on the same and good ratios in the process. But anyway, it was one of those things where Ginkle, you know, he was the closer until he wasn't up until about like 5 p.m. yesterday, so I made that swap. But one of the things where I expect Hernandez to be the closer by the end of today, hopefully. It's been very quiet, I'd say. It's been rather, I expected more. It's the final 2 hours though, right? We have 2 more hours before
relievers go like hotcakes these last 2 hours, because they'll get the most in return, as we already saw with the Paul Sewald deal. Like, these are the prime pieces. So they're going to get, I still like David Bednar's. You basically have to have certain teams like, okay, we're not trading Bednar. Okay, now we'll move on to Carlos Hernandez. That's what that comes down to.
Yeah, I'm hoping, and that's the thing, Carlos Hernandez, and that's another thing. Like, Santos, I think, is safe. I think he's only 23. I don't think he's getting dealt. But, like, there's a lot of these teams where, like, Brooks Raley, and I'm sure we'll talk about him, but he's the guy that was heavily fabbed, even in, at least in 15s. I'm looking at the main event stuff. He was the most added player. And I could see him being dealt before the end of the day. Like, I could see the Mets being four men deep after the first, you know, they dealt the first three. So that's why it's like, I was afraid to buy in on closers in general this week, because I expect so much movement. I think Robert Suarez is probably one of the better ads, if because of all the hater rumors.
I love that call. I told Bloomfield that on Thursday night. I like the Suarez concept. You just hit on Bailey's or Raley, so pass on that. He's gotten two of the last three. He's gotten two saves his last three outings.
He's the guy if he's there. That's kind of what it is. He's the guy if he's there.
He's added 170 leagues, as high as 71. Next up, and then I'll skip Giovanni Gallegos, 62 leagues, as high as 67. We already talked about him. So next up, though, is a guy that I know you and I talked about in our group chat and when in the Discord as someone you've had trouble kind of buying into so far, and that is one Steven Matz, who was picked up in 69 leagues as high as $31. And since rejoining the rotation on July 9th, like, sometimes guys just need a timeout, and he got a timeout, and he's been very effective, 1.69 ERA, 3.63 xFIP, 5 earned runs over 26 and 2/3 innings, 27 strikeouts. He only had 2 Ks in his last outing, but he's allowed 1 earned run or less in 4 of his 5 outings, Kurland. Matz has been effective. Obviously, things can change. It is Steven Matz. We all know where this roller coaster ride can go. But right now, he's been very, very good. In a world, like we talked about earlier in other shows, it is sometimes really, really, really difficult to find starting pitching out there right now. So Steven Matz, I grabbed him in places this past week for the two-step. I think he's going to be a guy that sticks around for a bit.
So with anyone else, it doesn't matter with anybody. You don't have to believe in it to win with it. You know what I mean? You don't have
it's
to
like
say,
Santa Claus. It's cool.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He is Santa Claus. We know he's not real, but you're going to enjoy the Christmas gifts he's bringing, right? But we need more than one day of gifts, and he's been given that. He's been very giving of late. I appreciate that, but I don't appreciate it because I don't have him anywhere. But it was one of those things where it's like he came up against the White Sox, did really well across 5.1 innings, got crushed by the Nationals because the Nationals crush everyone randomly, especially lefties. So I guess that kind of makes sense.
And they just don't strike out.
But then he faced the Diamondbacks, who haven't been quite themselves the last few weeks, and then the Cubs twice. So it could be partially Matz is just better, but also paired with Matz getting a really pretty favorable, I'd say pretty favorable schedule for now too. It's funny because I looked at him today without knowing we were going to talk about him before he was on the outline. And I was just looking at, and I couldn't, there wasn't like, there's like no real, there's been some uptick in velo here and there, but not consistent. A small mix and pitch mix, but nothing that like stands out. So it's like, I'm really having a hard time finding what has changed that has gotten him. Like I haven't dug deep enough. Like I probably got to look at, I could probably have to go look at his
location,
where he's locating the pitches, like where is he throwing them? Is it the arm slot different? Is he getting different looks? Is he getting pitches? Is he just more what's that word I'm looking for? More deception in his pitches. There's a lot of stuff you have to look into to try to find this stuff sometimes. Or there's just no answer. He's just running hot, and that could easily be the answer. It's just aggravating because I think we know Matz can be good, has been good in the past. Is he finally just putting it together? And maybe I'm just not believing in it because of one bad start to the year, when really this could be closer to what we should expect rest of the season. Again, it doesn't matter if you believe in it or not. You should be riding this out regardless. And that's kind of goes back to our Taylor Walls conversation, where I was right about him, even while being very wrong about him. If that makes sense. Remember, like I told you, this isn't real. And it was
enjoy it while you can, and it's come crashing down. Yes.
But Paredes, he continues to outproduce his metrics, and it's because he's just pulling everything in the air. He's going full Arenado.
Yep. He's going full Bregman. I want to go Arenado. Same. Bregman. Yeah.
If you look at Arenado's home runs, it's the same thing. Yeah. It's what he does.
He's the right-handed Didi Gregorius.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where he's pulled. But the reason why it works for a Paredes type is because he makes so much contact, because he has really good plate approach. So I think that allows. That allows Paredes to kind of sell out for power without it being so detrimental to his underlying stats. That's a whole other discussion for another day. But my point being is that sometimes you can't find a reason to buy into something. It doesn't mean you shouldn't buy into it while it's producing. We like Brent Rooker, another guy that if you rode that great wave at the beginning of the year, great. But also know that if he starts sucking, that's probably the time to drop them. And that's kind of like people tend to over like hold on to these guys. Like, oh, I got the next breakout. You gotta have to treat. I think you still have to treat these months like you treat early months. Ride the hot wave and be willing to cut bait the second they start scuffling.
Hit that ripcord the second things get south.
Because like, because you well especially now there is no time to like well let's see where this
can't
goes.
Make it up. Yeah,
there is no time. This is the you have to be. You have to be. I think was it? What do they call? What is a robot? I'm trying to think of what Phil calls it. Cutthroat Carl, I think is what he calls it. He goes full Cutthroat Phil, Carl, cutthroat and I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. Like you got right now, you have to be. Like, that's why I'm mad at myself for not being more cutthroat.
Wasn't Cutthroat Carl from Billy Madison, by the way?
That's isn't probably that, where he got it.
Isn't that Cutthroat Carl? Because he's, I think Cutthroat Carl was the assistant that became Billy's fan while the other assistant went to fight Billy. That's just me going down a rabbit hole because I love the old school Adam Sandler movies, but that's another podcast for another day. This kind of transitions for us, not Cutthroat Carl, Steven Matz, and a rough lefty pitcher. Can we buy into this Santa Claus thing? And that is Jose Quintana, another guy. He picked up in 58 leagues as high as $34. He'll be widely available this week. So I think people are still not buying it yet. He returned from the IL, made his first two starts now for the Mets, given the Mets are going to be horrible. Actually, they're not trading hitting, so they still have offense. Quintana's thrown 11 innings, allowed 4 in runs, 3 walks, 8 strikeouts, nothing dominating. It was the White Sox at the Yankees. Like, it's 2 earned runs in each start, so that doesn't crush you. 3.27 ERA. Quintana's kind of been a ratio dude the last couple of years. I'll give him that much. He actually has been decent in that. Strikeouts have been the concern. So you might actually trust him a little more than Steven Matz, to be totally honest here. But what's your thoughts on Quintana and compare? What's your thoughts on Quintana? Then I got a comparison for you.
Well, I did just do a quick look at Matz, and even his underlying metrics suggest. Sorry, I know I'm going back on Matz real quick just because I'm curious. And yeah, he's been really good, and even his underlying metrics are actually really solid, like mid high threes.
If you look at just his last start since
joining last 4 or 5 starts,
it's looked. But it's a different pitcher almost.
But that's what's bothering me is because I think the Matz we're getting is the one you drafted in draft season, hoping that he'd be, you know, kind of the same Matz we've seen in the past. And I think I have a hard time accepting that he suddenly figured it out when I can't pinpoint the exact reasoning just yet.
Well, I think a lot of it is he got demoted to the bullpen. Literally, that's a lot of extra time to sit back there and tinker with stuff and refine yourself.
Yeah. Plus, I think the Cardinals just suck with the. Maybe it was game calling. Maybe it was
Ollie Marmol was too involved because that guy's a freaking moron.
Maybe Contreras just isn't a good catcher like everybody was saying.
As well.
But my thing is that I think that I got so caught up in Matz being bad that I forgot that Matz is still he was a solid pitcher. He was an SP5 and he's kind of pitching to that SP. He's pitching better than SP5 right now, but he's kind of like even if he falls back to what you expect, he would be an SP5 for you, SP6 type of guy. And I think that's fair to expect the rest of the season. So I shouldn't be so angry and so like unbelievable of Matz. It's just one of those things where it's been so bad this year that, and there was a lot of hype, I guess, in the community for him that maybe it's one of those things where it's like, okay, he's finally panning out, but maybe he's always been due to be this guy, just hasn't been. Anyway, moving over to Quintana. Quintana's kind of like you mentioned, he's kind of that guy. He's not going to strike out much. He's not going to give you a whole lot of like help. Like he'll be okay with the ratios. Keeps ball on the ground a decent amount, 45.7%. So I think that he's going to be okay. He's more of a 15 team type, more of like that Kyle Gibson ish type of pitcher where I don't maybe with, but even worse with the strikeouts, probably he's just that guy. He's just a guy. That's the only way to put him. Quintana's going to, you shouldn't be plugging him in and setting him for getting him type. I mean, 4.62 Sierra. He's kind of always outproduced his Sierra. It's not always, but like he has at various times, even going back last year, but he's a guy that he's going to help you in ratios a little bit, get some wins maybe because the Mets don't have a terrible offense like you mentioned. But
so I was saying they're not trading the offense, which is really
funny awful though.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's not going to get you wins. It's just ratios and hope he runs into like maybe a K per inning if you get lucky.
That's what if you're lucky. Or honestly, just take the ratio help with the occasional
look at it. He gets added this week. He gets at Kansas City on Tuesday and then it's at Baltimore over the weekend, which is tough. But and then
you're not happy to start him, but you're accepting
here's the kicker though. Here's the frustrating one. If you added him this week, you're probably dropping him because he gets the Braves next weekend. So
and that's you kind of
or you sit him. He's a bench streamer, like we talked about.
But, and this is why, by the way, this is exactly why I usually do. Where did I go with this? Oh my god, my head hurts. I completely blanked out. I was gonna say, wow, that was bad. Holy crap, Bubba. That was bad.
Somehow Mike Kirlin got lost for words, everybody.
I lost my own brain. I think it's because I was multitasking and I looked at my phone for a second and that's what I get for doing that.
There's that ADD, folks.
At the end of the day, it's a fleeting thought. At the end of the day, though, it's Quintana's just a guy. You kind of he's 15 team relevant, not 12. And the Kyle Gibson comp comes to mind because I always thought of Kyle Gibson as a guy like, you're getting him in there. He's not going to kill your ratios, a potential for a win. You prefer the two start weeks and you're bench streaming him at best right now in 15s, but in 12s, it's hard to imagine you picking him up for any reason other than if you're desperate. But even then, how, I can't imagine a 12 teamer deep enough to where you're getting Quintana and hoping that he's like gonna, he's not gonna save your season. He's a guy that he's more of like your roster stabilizer towards the end of the year. Now you need innings, you need a safety option. He's kind of that guy. That's how I view Quintana. He's not gonna be a difference maker for you though.
Last one I want to ask about, there's, because a lot of these move now is like guys we talked about a million times and this, that, and the other. But the curious case here, Brady Singer, picked up in 46 leagues as high as $23. He's given up 2 earned runs in each of his last 2 starts, striking out 19 overall. There's been a documented pitch mix change in what he's doing over the last couple of starts, which gets, you know, I saw Mike's face on the screen. We all talk about it in the industry. When you see a pitch mix change, it kind of gets your ears perked up and you're like, okay, I'm interested. Like, well, now we're in. Did you buy back in on Brady Singer this week?
Well, he wasn't really available anywhere, but I think for at least again for deeper formats, and this is where I in 12s I understood waiting this long, but it would have sucked to miss those last 2 starts but he has incorporated the changeup about 10% more of the time, like give or take, you know, a little bit less, a little bit more per start, but having another pitch, I believe he's throwing it against lefties, which helps because he was lacking that option against lefties. I'll double check that real quick, but at the end of the day. Yeah, you mentioned it. 2 earned runs or less last 2 starts, a 54.2. And this is, I'm going back to the last 4 starts overall for Singer that since this changeup been incorporated more, a 54.2% ground ball rate, a 21% K minus walk rate, which again, very strong numbers. The 5.52 ERA, it's not fair because that's just the ERA. I understand that's the production we're getting, but we're talking about a low 3s FIP and XFIP and a low 3 Sierra, which again, all the underlying indicators suggesting that he's pretty much 2 runs better than he's been over those 4 starts. But he also had, this comes with a 386 BABIP and a 66% strand rate. League average being about 72-ish, I believe, percent on the strand rate. And the BABIP obviously just being inflated like it is. But having a changeup, having that new pitch or that third pitch to lean on, even if it's 10% of the time, it's still something. And he is throwing it strictly to lefties, basically. He's throwing it twice to righties. And he's thrown 116 times lefty. So that's kind of what he's needed. Cause I honestly should go back and look at how lefties are hitting him on the other pitches. Cause if you break it down, you'll see the individual pitch use per handedness. And then from there, you'd see how the handedness attacked certain pitches. I think I was listening to Eno talk about how lefties can hit sweepers better, probably because of release point and where it's coming from. So they get that type of view on it. So it makes sense, right? So say Springer was throwing sliders more to lefties because he was throwing it, you know, he was throwing them. He was pretty much a sinker slider. Say the slider was getting hit easier against lefties because they could see it better. So now he's swapped the sinker slider usage for heavier changeup usage against lefties. And it's actually working, just stuff like that. Like it would take a way longer dive than I can do while I'm talking on this podcast, but just that's where my head goes. And that's how I know I've really advanced as a it makes me feel good about my analysis because that's where my head goes, where I gotta go look into that stuff now. So
it'll be fun to see your YouTube video short on that one because your wheels churning now. On that one.
Well, I actually forgot to make this YouTube short on just the stuff I tweeted the other day because I usually take my tweets and put them into YouTube because it's easy just reusing the same content because I'm lazy. But at the end of the day though, having that third pitch, even if it's 10% of the time, it's still a third pitch. Players have to prep for per Singer.
Huge difference.
And I think he can build on that. If he can improve in the offseason, that'd be great. Maybe we were a year early on the full Singer breakout because then a lot of people were in on him. But at the end of the day, having that pitch, seeing production change follow, like you mentioned, it's kind of makes it easier to buy into. I don't know what to expect the rest of the season, but it's going to be fun to watch him. Somebody that you should be watching, streaming while he's running hot. And at the end of the day, if he actually finishes out the season strong, you're going to see him on he's going to be a very popular sleeper pick next year type of thing. So Brady Singer is a guy that I like what I'm seeing, but again, it goes back to who cares if it works long-term, ride it while it's there.
Want it for now. We're all about the now. Speaking of now, who'd you add in Fab this week? Let's recap our Fab, do a couple listener questions, and head on out for the day.
Okay, so who did I get this week? I'm trying to remember. This week was very light. I ended up getting Marco Luciano $4.03 because why not? And then just it goes back to I was chasing upside at middle infield. It was either him or Bryce Terang. I'm like, I know, and I love Terang, but that was back when he was doing stuff. He hasn't really done much. The only thing with Terang is the playing time was guaranteed. I wanted to take a shot on upside. And again, it's a weekly rental here. I took Luciano with the idea of I'm just renting him for a week, probably dropping him for another middle infield option that comes available. I'm playing matchups / hot hands, and that's how I'm treating my middle infield right now. So anyway, Luciano was the guy I grabbed. Really cheap. Because he went for as high as 44 in the mains, and 4 was like closer to the bottom. I got a good price on him, almost considered. and chasing upside. And then my other ad this week was, I dropped Jesus Sanchez, and I was like, and he's still like 90 something percent roster, so it must have been a more surprising drop than many, I guess, maybe weren't considering. I dropped, who did I drop him for? Give me a second. Sorry. Oh, Dominic Canzone. And people are like, who? Because he basically picked up playing time right before the trade deadline, was batting fifth, playing against righties. I was really into him. I looked into him a little bit. He's like very small sample, but barreling the ball really well, hitting the ball hard, kind of the combination you want, while also having a 90% Z contact, which for reference, again, league average, I'm trying to think of the average. It doesn't matter because anything over like 90% or above is like considered pretty much elite in zone contact. And Canzone was giving that while barreling the ball well, while hitting the ball hard. So I was like, cool, he's showing off, he's showing these skills you really want to see all together, right? Is it a hot streak? Is it a small sample? It's too small of a sample to take anything meaningful away. But the idea was playing time, middle of the order, paired with some interesting skills. And then he gets traded, and I lose a game already on Monday that he should have probably been starting. And although I think the trade for Canzone ends up being kind of a neutral move, like maybe he would have actually probably gains, now he's probably guaranteed full-time playing time against righties. Whereas, you know, they still had Alec Thomas, McCarthy, and Gurriel, among others. Like they were kind of, I think they were showcasing him, was the only reason why he even got the playing time, which makes sense now. But it was such a tight fit there that I think the leash was way shorter for Canzone there. I think now he can enter the Mariners lineup. They're expected to trade Teoscar, and now there's no reason why him, my boy Cade Marlowe, which I didn't add, which I wish I did, because Marlowe is just fun name, fun guy. I liked him a lot in the preseason. But I think those are guys that like can be difference makers, or at least helpful in deeper formats, get mostly regular playing time. Both are lefties, so both can probably platoon at the end of the day. But maybe the Seattle says screw the platoons, let's let these young guys play it out, because we're gonna rebuild and see what they can offer as full-time bats the rest of the season. I mean, they've traded Pollock, that was already one of their platoon bats.
They're already gonna trade Teoscar, it sounds like. So,
and Teoscar is opening up full-time play appearances. They already had Tom Murphy and Cal Raleigh playing together in lineups, which you're DHing a catcher. That shows you where your roster, it shows you how you're. And the other part of that trade, Josh Rojas becomes an interesting middle infield option too, or if you're desperate. I think because Colt Wong's been awful, and they've had Caballero, whatever his name is, as well. They haven't really had a middle infield guy. I think Rojas goes right in there and has playing time again. So that's kind of like the unsung hero of that trade that people might have forgot about, that we've seen Rojas with playing time. He can hit for decent batting average, and he could probably steal some bases on that team.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how that plays out. My FAB results, so this is where 12s get fun, because you're all going to get like, what? So I had Brady Singer. 6-1, dropped Aaron Civale. The reasoning behind this one. Well,
that was before the trade. That was before the trade.
Well, it was before the trade for one. And I've had dropped Civale a lot this year. And that's the beauty of 12s. Because I had my notes text me when I did my FAB. I needed strikeouts big time. Civale doesn't strike anybody out. Just doesn't. And Springer all of a sudden is. So I was willing to take the chance in a 12. There will also be the chance I'll be trying to re-add Aaron Civale this weekend. I needed the buildup on strikeouts. This guy doesn't give a ton of strikeouts, but I just put a small bit in. Ben Lively, two nice starts, dropped AJ Puck 3-0. Lively's been very serviceable of late. And then I dropped my boy Jonah Heim out of Luis Campusano for $1. No runner-up bid.
I'm so upset because I didn't need to go after him, but you know I would have been on him because I drafted him in my main. I wrote him up in the I was so in on him. I think it was one of our guys, us at GT in general, were really in on at that price, because he's doing now what we expected him to do at the beginning of the year. Got off to a rough start. Playing time is a question for whatever reason, because the Padres are idiots. And then the injury. So, but hey, if he finishes strong,
it's his gig right now.
If he finishes strong, he's going to be a top. He's going to be like next year's Sean Murphy, where he's probably going to go around 10th at catcher with a chance to be better. I hope he's not next year's Wilson Contreras or William Contreras, because we got burned by that. I think
he'll be next year's Jonah Heim, because people will still be focused on other people.
I'd be surprised. You think he'll be low enough? I'm just thinking
like, I think he'll be like the 14th or 15th catcher off the boards.
I'll have him ranked higher. I just like, for instance, now I'm just going off on a tangent because I just love Campusano. I love him so much, I don't know his name, right? Campusano is just one of those guys where like the power's there, the playing time's there. We see how the Padres treat catchers. That's why I say next year Sean Murphy, because I think he should be ranked right around that fringe top 10. Because I'm off the top of my head, you have Jonah Heim ahead of him, assuming that the wrist injury doesn't linger into the next offseason. You have Sean Murphy, obviously. You have Francisco Alvarez, JTR, and I'm sure there's a few more, Will Smith, and then it starts getting kind of in that territory of why wouldn't Campusano fit right in there?
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying kind of.
I'm sure there's a name
drafted.
There's a name I'm forgetting, I'm sure. Because we have to remember, Varsha loses eligibility. Henry Davis loses eligibility.
Danny Jansen will still get love. People love Danny Jansen.
Jansen, see, but I just don't trust. Kirk might be the afterthought. We'll see how Kirk finishes.
Yeah, he's hitting a good right now, too.
We'll see, because that's going to be interesting. Anyway, sorry, as you were.
In my OC2, I added Mike Moustakas, dropped Owen Miller as a third base upgrade. Again, this is going to get interesting, because these are all before the trades, folks. 6-0. Randall, and I bid high in these leagues because I have more money than most people, so I want to make sure I got these players.
Yeah, get your guy.
Just so people understand, like, there's a reason I'm up here. Added Randall Grichuk, dropped Shane Bieber, 4-0. Added Brady Singer, dropped AJ Puck, 4-1 in that league. In my other OC, I added Jose Quintana, dropped Miles Mikolas, 1-0. Added Ben Lively, dropped Logan Allen, 1-0. I just wanted the two steps because I need to accumulate everything in that league. I need all the pitching help I can. So it's going to be straight. I'm punting ratios, given those two guys have actually given good ratios lately. And I'm looking for anything else I can get my hands on at the position. And that should do it, because nobody cares about my other leagues. They just want those ones. All right. Let's talk a couple listener questions and then head on out for the week. It's great to have Mike Curlin back on the show, everybody. Joe G, he asks, any of these bats stand out to add in deep mixed roto? Matt Wallner, Adam Duvall, Kepler, Brent Rooker, Luke Rayleigh, Jose Siri, Dom Canzone. Deep mixed roto, who do you prefer out of that group?
Wow, that's a lot of names to look into. I know the...
Well, for me, it's Kepler out the gate because he should be available in non-deep leagues. But
yeah,
these are all streaming bats, to be honest.
Kepler's been rock solid. I think you go with Kepler right now while he's running. You know how Kepler could run hot right now. He's hitting .326, two home runs, 10 runs, 6 RBIs over the last 14 days. So that's a guy that's like you want to have him there. Obviously, I'm biased towards Canzone, but I think Canzone's very much a wait-and-see guy out of those names. And I'm saying that with the bias of I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. But he's a guy that he's more of your watch list out of those names. And then Wallner,
interesting.
Siri's always interesting. Siri's always like one strong run away from being like a really like a rock star for 2 weeks. Just how he is. Siri just runs kind of like that. Right now he's hitting .250 with two home runs over the last 10 days as well. So it's kind of like pick your poison. I think Kepler is the safest for playing time for power. If you want a little bit of speed upside, Siri, although hasn't stolen bases lately, can. So you can kind of go that route if you're chasing speed. But a lot of it's need based. But if you're looking for playing time and production, Kepler kind of checks both those boxes right now.
Yep, I'm 100% with that one. Ryan Bloomfield asks, how did Curlin convince Trader Jerry to trade for Dominic Canzone? That's just a tongue in cheek one, of course. Little Book of Calm says, process wise, how do you find or even stream stolen bases on the wire? Is it as simple as sorting the wire by stolen bases over the last 14 days and crossing your fingers, or do you incorporate time to first, sprint speed data, etc.? And scout upcoming said schedules.
You want to go first on this one?
I know there's some guys that go super deep into the schedules and everything, and like I have my ideas, but to me it's like in this era of everybody running, schedules is a little less as it used to be. It's still valuable, don't get me wrong, but for me it's a lot of I'm looking at guys that just steal a ton to begin with, prospects that come up and steal a ton to begin with, and then have the playing time, so they're getting on base, they're doing their thing. So a lot of it to me is, I'm fortunate I don't have to stream steals because I'm crushing steals as it begins with, so I haven't had to really worry about that. But it's like, you know, for instance, like when Samad Taylor comes up for – or like Mikel Garcia comes up for the Royals, these the Royals guys, where you know they run a ton of the minors, and you know this team likes to run a ton, well, they become a little more valuable for you. But you still need the playing time, and that's why like a guy like Samad Taylor is really only for the deepest of leagues because he's not playing enough to get that luxury. You got your guys like Alec Thomas and stuff. Well, yes, we know they run. Go grab him. Go. That's kind of how I look at it. There's probably a much more scientific and better approach to it. But this is the caveman in me where I just kind of look at the situations, the talent, and I roll with that. So how do you approach steals?
So it's not too different. I actually like to keep it simple on this type of stuff. First off, you mentioned it. Who's available? Let's start with like who's there? Is Travis Jankowski there? And if you look at what he's been doing, he's still like he's 1-2. Like he's running like, and but the thing is it's not only is it a skill set. I don't care how slow or fast you are. Freddie Freeman's not fast. He's stealing bases crazy. It's a skill set for some people. You have guys like Ketel Marte for years who's always been fast and never stole bases. Speed is honestly, I can't say it's meaningless, but it's one of those things where it's
trust me, my whole life I've said it's overrated.
Yeah. Well, the drug, or because of other reasons, because speed the drug can actually be helpful, I'm sure. But that's, way to go. Way to get me off tangent, right? Off topic. You did this time was your fault because I like drugs. So back to what I was thinking was, obviously, is it a skill set? Can they do it? Is it, how aggressive is the team? Is the team like the Rockies who don't really run a lot, or is the team or the Twins that don't really run a lot outside of Willie Castro, which is weird. But like you gotta go look at team and get the idea of what the team likes to do. Well, is the team going to be favorable towards running? And if so, how aggressive are they? And then you can kind of like, all right, cool. So it checks the boxes. Okay. This team doesn't mind running or likes to run. This player has a path to playing time. They have decent on-base skills. They don't have to be good. They just have to get on base, right? But obviously, you want them hitting higher in the lineup, because the higher in the lineup they hit, the more likely they are to run, or the more opportunities they have to run, assuming that they get on base more. But it's a matter of, it's just kind of keep it simple. Let's look at schedules. Okay, cool. And if you really want to get into it, I like to look at opposing teams, but not so much the pitchers as much as the catchers. Like you can kind of get an idea of, like, you know the Guardians can't really stop people from running. So if you have a guy like Jankowski, who was readily available and is readily available still in shallower formats, he's batting second for the Rangers. He's been getting on base. He's been hitting well overall. And we know Jankowski can run. So he's kind of checking all the boxes, and the Rangers don't mind running. So right there is a guy that's like a perfect streamer. Now he's not available in a lot of leagues. So I'm trying to think of like a deeper league guy, but you mentioned prospects. You can see if it's a skill set of theirs. And, but yeah, it's really simple. Like I'll look at oncoming schedules, try to get as many games played as possible. And if you're lucky enough to pair games played and playing time and all that with bad catchers, that's just kind of a cherry on top. I could care less about the catchers at this point. I want a guy who has the path of playing time. I want a guy who has the skill set to do so, and a guy that and kind of pair those two first and kind of let the rest fall in place. Because at the end of the day, you don't want to chase a guy like the days of where Draw Dyson, they don't really have those pinch runners. They exist, but they're not like they used to be, where you can get Draw Dyson, who might start one game a week but steal you 3 or 4 bases just because he's pinch running every other night. Yeah. That type of thing isn't there, and that's honestly not the best way to approach it anyway, because you just never know when those guys are going to be utilized. But I don't know. I think it's, you keep it simple first, and then you get more in-depth. I think you need to get more in-depth the deeper you go into the format. So if it's a really deep format, then you kind of have to be really in-depth, because then you have to get the guy who might get the chip in steal for that week. But that's beyond what I'm willing to do for saves right now.
Yeah, I'm 100% on board with that. So, yeah, I always approach the KISS method in life as most often as I can. But, you know, some situations obviously deserve a lot more in-depth stuff. But when I'm just streaming stuff, it's pretty much keep it as simple as you can. That's the way I look at it. And we'll see. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. That's fantasy baseball in a nutshell, folks. And that'll wrap up another episode of Bench with Bubba. So, Kerwin, as always, thanks for joining me. Hopefully we can make this work again in the next week or two. But any final thoughts?
I believe I'm available both days that you usually are for the show next week, so we should be good, at least for one more week. Final thoughts. I have one more article for The Athletic for the year, and then the rest of the, obviously, I'm already starting the write-ups for the GT stuff, because I still do the Savant stuff. All the news, I've been trying to keep track and like posting in the same format to make it really easy for people to follow. So you've been keeping up with all the injury news, all the trade stuff. I've been putting it in the Patreon write-ups as well. And then, but the rest of the season, we're still going to do the Savant recaps until the very last day and lineup stuff. Up until the very last, probably, period. I don't see the point in doing it beyond that.
Yeah,
but then
after lock, yeah.
Well, once the playoffs start, I actually like to look at the playoffs content too. I do the same playoff content, because what I'd like to do is I take the same playoff information and I monitor what the team does from like signing and trade stuff in the offseason, and then compare like, okay, well, this guy the last 3 weeks and into the playoffs did this, batted here, and then we could expect them to kind of start off there in the year. And so there could be some give and take there. So I do like to keep it going into the playoffs for the Patreon. And then we have a whole, and then we jump. I usually don't take too much of a break, maybe a week or two from like, but I get bored. I start doing my player analysis really quick, because I'm in such a habit of doing it. Sure, I take a few weeks off like anyone else does, but like not like every day for a few weeks. It's like 2 days off. All right, cool. I'm gonna look into like 10 players today and do write up. So like, anyway, the final thoughts are never final with me. They're always going.
No, they're not. But that'll do it, folks. Make sure you follow Mike on Twitter at Mike_Kerland. You get all the goodies there. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric. We'll be back with you guys next week to recap Fab. Probably talk a little more playing time situations. We get the full fallout. It's like Oppenheimer around here with the trade deadline and much, much more. But this was Benched with Bubba, episode 599, week 18, Fab recap. Catch y'all next time.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.